I remember you. You're the one who made my dreams come true.
Are you one of those who claims to never forget a face? Perhaps you recognise people you went to primary school with, or you see the same actors pop up in small parts, not the big ones, on TV again and again. Now, if all this sounds familiar, you could be, you know, what's now called a super recogniser. Someone with above average facial recognition ability. It's a skill that some within policing are calling the next big thing in law enforcement, no less than a third revolution in forensics, after fingerprints and DNA. Now, admittedly, that prediction comes from a key player in this quite fascinating new development. He's a senior policeman heading a fairly new specialised unit at the London Met, a group of officers chosen because of their freakish ability to recognise faces and bodies from the volumes of CCTV footage collected in the UK. But I shall let the journalist who uncovered all these developments tell us the full story. Patrick Raden-Keefe is a staff writer for The New Yorker, and earlier this year he stumbled across this venture and he visited the Met's headquarters in New Scotland Yard to spend a week with the super recognisers. I love that name. I welcomed him a bit earlier to Saturday Extra.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's just such a marvellous story, this. How good are the super recognisers of Scotland Yard at recognising faces? I mean, did you observe any of these feats of facial recognition while you were there?
Yeah, I did, absolutely. You sit in this little unit they have on the ninth floor of New Scotland Yard, and what they do basically all day is flip through these photographs, screen grabs, taken from CCTV surveillance of people committing crimes, and then they match them to mugshots of known criminals, or in many cases, they actually recognize criminals they've come across themselves, sometimes years earlier.
The Met's team of super recognizers, I just can feel a television series coming on, was assembled by Detective Chief Inspector Mick Neville, who calls himself the Henry Ford of CCTV. What's their process? How do they go about their work?
Well, what happened with Neville is that he noticed that for decades in London, and I'm sure this is true in Australia as well, and it's been very much true in the States, new CCTV cameras were popping up all over the place. And the rationale was that it would prevent crime. Criminals wouldn't actually go and snatch a purse or rob a shop if there was a CCTV camera in the vicinity. And that turned out not to be true. And so he found that, in fact, there was all of this footage of people just blithely committing crimes on camera. The problem was they couldn't identify the people in the pictures. And so his innovation was to find the cops who were especially good at remembering faces. And at first it was kind of an informal thing. In every different district, there might be one or two detectives who had an especially good recall for faces. And what he did was he started pulling them in, and then he learned, as all this was happening, that there were some scientists at Harvard studying what they called super recognizers. And so he started subjecting these officers with the Met to tests and seeing who actually were real super recognizers. And then eventually what he did was put together a dedicated unit made up exclusively of these people.
And I gather that when a super recognizer makes an identification, they have to submit it for a peer review in which a second super recognizer comes to an independent judgment.
Yes, because they're not always right. And they're refreshingly candid about the fact that they're not infallible. So what they do is they'll make an identification. And sometimes what that is it's looking at a screen grab and saying, oh, look, this guy here matches this face that we found in our database of people who've been arrested in the past. And sometimes it's not that. Sometimes it's, that's the guy I arrested 6 years ago and spent an hour with, and I remember him all these years later. And once they do that identification, they then need to pass it along to another super recognizer and essentially say, do these two match?
You recount some pretty amazing stories in your article about the crime solving and arresting people. But I should mention that this is an ability that can't be necessarily switched off terribly easily. So many arrests are made by off-duty officers. Was there a case that particularly stood out to you?
Well, there was one guy named, who had a wonderful name, a sort of appropriate name. One of the detectives in the unit was a guy named James Rabbit. And James Rabbit was very, very good at doing these identifications. But the problem for him is that he would often be out in the evening on a weekend just for drinks with friends or out on a date. And all of a sudden, across a crowded intersection, he would spot somebody who had an outstanding warrant. And so it wasn't unusual at all for him to just bolt off running and make an arrest. And he told me that, in fact, there are often weeks in which he'll make 3 to 5 arrests off duty in this manner, just walking around, and his brain is always switched on and looking for suspects.
Dear, oh dear, I don't know that I'd want to be dating somebody like that, but anyway.
Right, exactly.
Now, obviously they need lots of images of people caught in the act to work from, which is where, of course, London's 1 million or so CCTV cameras came in. What did the police do with all the images before this team was assembled?
Well, it was much more of a kind of piecemeal operation. In fact, they had this huge database of footage of people committing crimes who were unidentified. And with literally 100,000 or more images of different people committing these crimes, and they didn't really know what to do with it. So they would farm these out sometimes and see if anybody could identify people, but more often than not, they weren't identified.
And I suppose the obvious question, sorry to interrupt you, is how have the courts reacted to this?
So they've been receptive, at least in the UK. The super recognizers have often gone in to testify in court and essentially said, that guy there sitting before you is the person in this bit of footage of somebody committing an armed robbery. But I will say there are some, I think, legitimate civil liberties concerns about this type of policing power. And one thing that the super recognizers were very hasty to point out is that nobody ever goes to jail on their say alone. More often than not, they're kind of the first step in the investigation. They say, oh, it looks like this guy. And then somebody goes and questions the guy and searches his house and finds other evidence before you'd actually see somebody taken off to jail.
And Patrick, are we talking about sort of blurry pictures, are we? I mean, we've all seen pictures, I think, that come from those CCTV cameras, and they're often extremely indistinct. Sometimes they're very distinct, but are you saying that these people have a great capacity to sort of almost do one and one makes three by their ability to match and to, well, almost infer from what you're saying?
Yeah, it's completely extraordinary to see this in action. I mean, there's an example, a story I tell in the piece about how in 2011, there were a series of big riots in London. And what came out of that was thousands and thousands of hours of CCTV footage of unidentified people committing crimes. And they tried initially to use automated kind of algorithms, facial recognition programs, to identify people. And of all these images, there was only one person actually identified by the algorithms. There was one super recognizer who identified 600 people by pouring through these things. And my favorite illustration of this was that in one of the images, it was a grainy shot of a man throwing a Molotov cocktail. And the man's face was covered. He had a kind of a balaclava, a bandana, over his nose and mouth. And his head had a hat pulled down low. So really all you could see was his eyes. And it happened that 6 years earlier, this one cop had seen the guy at a police station and had noticed his eyes. And from the eyes, he recognized him. And they went and sought the guy out, and sure enough, it was the man in the picture, and he's now in jail.
Wow. Now, interestingly, you became attracted to this, I gather, noting a Harvard paper. So in other words, it came from the sort of academy, as it were, by trying to look at people who could and could not identify faces.
Yeah, well, it's one of the fascinating wrinkles in this story is that people didn't know until just the last decade that super recognizers existed. We thought generally that you could either recognize faces or you couldn't. And the people who couldn't, they suffer from what's known as prosopagnosia, or face blindness. And this is a condition that's been studied, and there were a team of scholars at Harvard, social psychologists, studying face blindness. And they put out a notice trying to find people in the Boston area who suffered from face blindness, who could come in, who they could do tests with. And what happened is when they put this notice out, they started hearing back from people saying, you know, I don't have face blindness. I think I have the opposite. I'm really good with faces. It's uncanny. Somebody I once stood in an elevator with for 2 minutes 10 years ago, I'll recognize them on the street now. And those people started coming in, and it was this team of scholars at Harvard that then coined the term super recognizers.
There's actually an online test, you tell me, that people can take to test their face recognition ability. It's called the Cambridge Face Memory Test, which I intend to do. Have you done it?
I have done it, and I would encourage you to do it. We actually put a link at the end of my article, the online version of my article at The New Yorker, if you go to the end of it, there's a link to the Cambridge Face Memory Test. It only takes about 20 minutes, and you get a score. And I've heard the most astonishing range of scores from people. In fact, we did an event that kind of grew out of this piece just this past weekend in New York, where we had some of the super recognizers come and speak at a festival. And during the Q&A, we had a man stand up and say, I took the test, I scored 100, a perfect score. And then I got an email asking me to take a harder test. I scored 100 on that. I got another email asking me to take a harder one. And eventually I went and was tested, and I am a super recognizer. So since reading the article, just a few weeks ago, he discovered that he's a super recognizer. And then we had a woman stand up and say, I took the test, and I discovered that I'm face blind. My whole life I've had trouble remembering faces and recognizing faces, but I didn't realize that I actually had a clinical condition.
Wow. Just let me tell listeners that I'm speaking to Patrick Radin-Keefe, who's a staff writer for The New Yorker, who's written this fabulous piece, a completely fresh piece about super recognizers. It's a new aspect of policing which the London Metropolitan Police have introduced, and I'm sure they're only the first of what will follow. They do have officers outside the team they can draw on for special cases. For instance, I'd love you to tell us the story of the black jailer named Idris Barda that they occasionally go to. What kinds of cases do they need help with?
Well, so one of the issues, and this was something I had not known until I started writing the piece, is that almost from birth, from the time that you're just a few months old, your brain becomes better at recognizing faces of the ethnicity that you're most often exposed to than it does faces of other races or ethnicities. It's actually entirely understandable that white people tend to be better at recognizing white people. Black people tend to be better at recognizing black people. That's something that starts from very, very young, from the time you're an infant. But this poses a handicap, obviously, for the super recognizers, which right now the core unit is all white. What they did was they tested loads and loads of officers in the Metropolitan Police. Metropolitan Police is a huge police force. So they tested all these officers at Scotland Yard, and they can draw on a much larger, I think there's over 100, it's something like 120 super recognizers who are now kind of scattered throughout the force. And Idris Barda, he's great because he's a jailer. He actually works in a jail in London, and every day he checks in dozens of people who've been arrested, and he remembers all of their faces. And in the piece, I say his brain is like an illustrated almanac of the criminal underworld in London. He's got this recall for all of these faces. And so they can come to him, and well, there are other people. I mean, there are Asian super recognizers and South Asian super recognizers, and people who may have a better facility for recognizing faces of that ethnicity.
I was just thinking of in the terrorist issue too. Presumably this could be applied more broadly than straight criminal work.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the interesting features of this story is that this is also new. I came in pretty early on, and at that point, the dedicated unit of super recognizers, I think, had been up and running for about 6 months. And right now, most of the work that they do is property crime and purse snatchers and pickpockets and people who steal mobile phones. But I have a feeling as authorities in the UK and in the US and in other countries around the world wake up to this skill and the idea that scientists now think that as many as 1 in 50, about 2% of people, have this skill and you can test for it, that they will start applying super recognizers to other, perhaps more urgent types of situations, and terrorism is an obvious one. Mm. I mean, we've had a number of very, very recent incidents. Most recently, just a few weeks ago in New York City, there was a bomb that went off on 23rd Street. And in the hours afterwards, it emerged that there was CCTV footage of a man depositing the bomb. And they knew that there was a terrorist at large. They didn't know who he was. They needed to figure it out, and there was this footage. In that case, he ended up being identified by a fingerprint, but you can imagine how bringing a team of super recognizers in to look at that footage would probably be a pretty good and expedient idea.
Just finally, there's a very funny part of your piece about criminals and their crime clothes, because the super recognizers were also pretty good at recognizing logos. Could you explain?
Yeah, well, this is one of the things that really knocked me out when I was doing the research was I was just startled that in a lot of the cases they make, I mean, I'll tell you an example of one guy. there are a lot of people who not only commit crimes on camera, but they commit the same crime on camera again and again and again. So there was a guy, for instance, named Austin Caballero, who was a guy who would go in and rob high-end boutiques. And they ended up finding photographs of him doing 38 different robberies, always using the same MO. And that was kind of amazing to me. But then they told me, oh, it's even better than that. It's not just that these people are habitual in the sense that they commit the same crime and often on camera. They often wear the same outfit. They call them, they sort of joke, they say it's like crime clothes. It's almost like you would get up and put your suit on for work. And so they'll have these situations, and even I could spot these in the database, where there'll be somebody committing a crime, you know, doing a kind of home invasion with an Adidas sweatshirt. And then there he is, robbing another house several months later, with the same sweatshirt. And then there he is again. Same sweatshirt again.
Well, it's quite a story, Patrick. Quite a story. I honestly think you should be buying the rights right now and writing the script. Look, thank you very much for your time. Congratulations.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Patrick's a staff writer for The New Yorker. I mean, after all, that's what New Tricks is, with UCOS, another version of people who've sort of got together who were rejected by other parts of the police force, and that's gone on for years. There's a link to the article on the Saturday Extra website, and I hope you enjoyed that particular development.